It's cool story, cool story. The Wheel of Time, the ultimate fantasy. It's cool story, cool story.
Hello.
Hey, I didn't want to like jump in and say something close to welcome to podcast and ruffle your feathers or anything.
Listen, it's really just about the Patreon episodes where you stole my line, but everything's fine.
You know, maybe I thought it was our line, and maybe I thought it was still us.
And maybe you thought wrong.
Even Louis Vuitton makes mistakes.
Hello. Hey. I can see your item on our shared note of the things you want to talk about, and I can't wait to hear what you're about to say.
You have no idea. You're never going to guess what it is, but are you up to date on Drag Race?
I am, yes.
Okay, so we just watched it last night, and it's about Candy Muse. There's nothing spoilery, so nothing about that. But before I even say something, you know how I used to feel about Candy Muse.
I do, and so I was like, is this going to be another moment where you've like turned a corner?
Some of it is, for sure. This is the one thing I still don't like about Candy Muse, and it's kind of not her fault, it's the judges' faults, is that she gets by on literally just being herself in any challenge that has to do with acting. Not comedy, but acting.
I agree. She's very... she plays herself always. That's all she does.
Yeah, and she gets like applauded for like just saying what she says in the workroom. In like acting challenges where she's supposed to be doing something else.
I do feel like that. Michelle called her out for that in the true crime one.
And then did it matter?
Well, no. I mean,
But I will say, and her looks are not always great on the runway. They get a little repetitive. Even if they're beautifully crafted, it's just like, okay. However, I really have come to love her this season. I really appreciate her.
Yeah, I like her a lot more this season, too, than I did on her original season, for sure.
Yeah, and before I tell you the funny thing, and it's Wheel of Time and Candy Muse related.
That is a crossover I never expected.
That's why I was like, you have no idea what I'm about to tell you. Before I tell you that moment of honesty, I think some of the things that I'm realizing when I look back at old Drag Race seasons and see queens that I previously had strong feelings about and that I have changed my mind about.
Yeah.
It's usually things that I was a little bit ashamed of myself about that I didn't like seeing other people being so proud of.
Yeah.
And seeing someone like Candy Muse, who is of a similar size to me at many points of my life, being so proud and outspoken and bold, I think triggered something in me that was like, no, not you.
Well, that's good to have that introspection.
It is. I'm feeling, you know, okay. But here's the thing. So last night we were watching Drag Race, and it was the scene in the workroom talking to Alexis. And Alexis says, they flash back to their conversation where they had their secret chat.
Yeah.
Their secret pact, LOL. And Alexis says to her something like, so, you know, I want to know if you would have my back if you needed, you know, whatever. Would you save me if this chance came up? Like, very straight out asks her.
Yeah.
And Candy Muse says, here's the thing. I think that at this point in the competition, strong people need to stand behind each other. And Alexis is like, exactly. And she never said yes. And I pause and I go to Davey. I'm like, Candy would make a really good Aes Sedai. Because Davey's like, what? I'm like, I know this is random, but the way she answered that question was so Aes Sedai.
Yes, letting Alexis believe she thinks that she's one of the strong ones she needs to stand behind.
Yes, and then later on, even when Alexis has her alone, she's like, hey, can I still count on you for that agreement we had earlier? And she just like shakes her head yes, because there was no agreement.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, of course, she could just say whatever she wants. And I'm thinking back about like, then it got me thinking, like, what Aja would Candy Muse be? And I think she'd probably be green or red.
Probably.
I can't decide. But yeah, then I thought, oh my God, you know, it would be a really fun Patreon episode or something.
If casting all the Drag Race queens as
Aes Sedai, Ajas and stuff.
Oh, that would be funny.
Or maybe in a closing episode or something.
I love it.
Anyway, that was my one thing of the week, I think. Just, I don't think I'm up to I think I've just been watching the things I'm watching, plugging along, Housewives, and that's kind of it.
I haven't really cared a whole lot about this season of All-Stars, but I will say, I think one of the reasons that queens tend to be more likable on All Stars is I feel like some of the, like, I have to prove myself, I'm a, like, whatever, is much less there. So they're just much more likable as people generally.
I agree. And I think a lot of them have had more time to connect outside of the show.
Yes.
So there's a lot less of what is that person thinking? What is their motivation?
Right.
I'm surprised they're doing a top two.
Yeah, the format is strange to me.
It's been a minute since there's been a, like, top... I've seen top three, but top... Other than the, top, like, two? You know, lip sync showdown and then the top two, but...
Who do you want to win?
I actually really am happy with the top three.
Okay.
To be honest. Although I think... No, I'm really happy with the top three out of the group. I could see a case for any of them. I think Jimbo should win it, honestly.
Yeah, I think based... Solely on performance, I think Jimbo should win, although I kind of want Jessica to win.
I would be really, really happy if Jessica won. I think Candy would be my least to win, but I would be really happy if Jessica won. I think she's done so well, especially last week. I honestly thought she was going to win, and I was cracking up, and I was like, oh, she's going to win. This is Jimbo's week to be in the bottom.
And then Jimbo came out and eviscerated.
That was incredible. I was really shocked at how great it was. So, yeah.
Well, should we get into the book?
I guess.
All right.
So we are flipping it back to me starting out, even though I thought we were going to be starting out with you each time this week, this book, because that prologue was like a book on its own.
Gosh, it really was.
That prologue was like a third of New Spring.
It really was.
So now we're really in the mix again. We're in chapter one, Lord of Chaos, right?
Mm-hmm.
I only have LOC in front of me, and I was like, wait, is it the Lord of Chaos or Lord of Chaos?
It's, I think, just Lord of Chaos.
Lord of Chaos. Okay, good. And chapter one is called Lion on the Hill. And I know you don't like the Beatles, so you did not think of the song Fool on the Hill like I did.
I've never even heard that song, I don't think.
And the icon is like that sword blade hilt, which has to do with blade masters historically so far. And we are starting out in Camelin, and we get a description reminding us of the city's layout. It's kind of been a long time since we've been like in Camelin for a while, right?
Well, I mean, the last book ended in Camelin, but...
No, I know that, but, well, the last, but I feel
the
like...
The last main series book,
It was kind of chaotic instantly,
yes,
you know what I mean?
True, yeah.
When I think of Camelin and the beginning of Rand falling in that yard, so innocent.
Such innocent times.
Right? It felt very King's Quest, easy beginning of a tale. You're wearing, like, your cloth armor still. You don't even have a weapon.
Nope. You haven't learned the basic level heal spell.
You didn't even know that there's magic that you'll be able to access. So, you know, it's the layout of Camelin with the, you know, inner city and the palace and the new city area. And we learn that it's often regarded as the second most beautiful city in the world. First most often to people who are from there. After Tarvalon, I think. Mm-hmm. And... currently, the weather, as we've heard, the weather's been really unusual. The heat is unbearable. It's not like this normal. It's not like this time of year normally. And it's affected Camelin and all of the cities nearby, all over Andor, it sounds like. And above the city, along with the banner of the Aes Sedai, with the, you know, little yin-yang sign without the dots, basically. Alongside that, they also fly the sort of dragon banner. They keep saying it's like an unusual animal. Isn't it like so obviously a dragon in my mind?
Well, they don't really have like myths about dragons, the animal, in their world. So,
but what about his arms, the tattoos of dragons?
Yeah, I think those aren't something that at least never eat shredded wheat west of the dragon. The Dragon Wall, like west of the Aiel, I don't think really have ever seen that.
Yeah, it just throws me every time I read that. And I'm like, am I missing something? Is this not a dragon?
It is a dragon.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That just seems so weird to me. But anyway, so it's the dragon banner alongside the Aes Sedai banner flying high. I think he's just practicing sword fighting techniques with... so here's the one thing I'm still not clear about, even after reading both chapters, and maybe you can clear it up for me right away.
would be most pleased to.
Okay, so he's sparring with five men, like five bare-chested men at the same time.
Yes.
Which, hey.
I know.
I mean, I just, maybe I'm just like a horn dog. So much of this chapter, I was like, is this the Harlequin romance novel?
The bald-headed man is coming right at him all sweaty.
Yes, yes. In pursuit. So anyway, he's sparring with these five men and they're all trying to go after him. He's holding up. He's, you know, doing his techniques just like he had done with Lan, kind of sparring. He's kind of, it felt like at first, like he was teaching them or like trying to, like, you know, hoping that they would best him, essentially. But I wasn't sure at first. Then one of them, he bests all of them except for one who, like, strikes him on the head or on the shoulder or something like that with their practice swords and such. So he's not hurt or anything. And then it ends the session. He says all of them should get paid. And the one who, the bald-headed man who bested him gets extra. So Su Lin hands out the money.
What is bald-headed ho from? Is that Drag Race?
Bald-headed
hoe. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a line either from Drag Race or Real Housewives.
So here's the thing about these five men. Are they men he's like, that are in his camp, that are like soldiers of his that he's like sparring with, that he allows them to spar with him and for like money? Is it men that are just like coming to fight the Dragon Reborn and he just accepts the challenge or something? Who are these five people? Are they his people?
Yeah, so basically he wants to, now that Lan is gone, he doesn't have somebody to train with, and so he's hired, like, put out a call for like the best swordsman, like, come at me, bro, and basically as a way to train himself and keep himself sharp.
Okay, so these are rando people who just like answered a personal ad.
Exactly. Yes.
Fight me if you dare.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. I just wanted to clear that up. Like, who were these five people? So this happens. They have the whole showdown. He does really well, surprises everybody. Everyone is dismissed. They make a lot of mentions about the shaved head man. So I think he's going to be significant, but who knows? But that's all we see of him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone is dismissed. Rand has amassed a big growing number of followers. Not like follow. I didn't mean that, like, followers like on social media.
On Instagram, yeah. He's kind of an influencer. He's these trending. Days.
Yeah, exactly. You can see him. He's modeling Skims body wear. So, you know, he's got, you know, a lot of people following the Dragon Reborn or the Karakarn or whatever they're calling him. And it's pretty varied. We have the Aiel that are with him and the Maidens of the Spear who, you know, surround him more closely, along with a lot of different types of people. And since he is in Camelin, he's currently surrounded by like Andorran nobles, it sounds like. I think all of the names that come up here essentially are just of nobility in Andor, right?
Yeah.
So he's never comfortable around these kinds of people. He's especially uncomfortable around the people from Andor. They're less down to earth and direct than he's even used to from like other places like Kyrian. But he's, you know, just here doing his thing while they fawn over him and basically are like all up on his jock. Everyone is like saying he's the best. You're the strongest fighter in the world. I've never seen anything like you.
Yeah.
Someone named Aramilla is first, and then she's like bumped aside by someone named Elenia. And it was like, you've seen Cinderella, obviously.
Yeah, right? It was, yes, very much that.
So the stepsisters, Anastasia and whatever, Drizella or whatever, I was like, it's so comedic. Even the way Robert Jordan wrote it, like she like bumps her aside.
The fact that you just pulled Drizella out of your ass is so impressive to me.
Oh, I think, I'm pretty sure that's, I couldn't spell it, but I think it's like Drizella or something like that. I don't know why I know the things I know. I watch a lot
of TV.
I'm
Googling it right now.
Okay.
Anastasia and Drizella. You're
yes.
right.
Yes.
Wow.
I love side characters. I told you, I was very impacted. I cried in that scene in Cinderella when they ripped her dress apart.
So rude.
It's terrible. So nasty and so rude. So this woman, Elenia, she pushes Aramilla aside, and she's going on to rant about how he's the best thing since sliced bread. He is better than even Soren Maravel. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I said that? Okay. And that person was Artur Hawkwing's greatest general. And even he died taking down four assassins, but he took them down this particular noble person, mm-hmm. especially, I don't really trust any of them, but I don't want to be too crazy. But this specific one, I do not trust at all.
Is this the sort of one that's described with like a fox face?
Uh-huh. That's exactly what I was going to say. They described her as having a vulpine face and honey blonde hair. And if that doesn't sound like a relative of Leandrin, I know she's not related to Leandrin, but if that doesn't sound like a Leandrin type vibe, and Leandrin type vibe to me is nasty, that I don't know what does. So I don't trust her, and I think she is one of the Forsaken that we saw at the beginning of this book.
Mm, interesting.
I'm pretty sure, because here's what they said about her. They said, she's going on about the Arthur Hawkwing thing, and it mentions that she is one of the things she loves to do is say all of her knowledge, share all of her knowledge of Andor's history, especially in areas where not much was known. And we know that a lot has been lost and isn't available to people, but when we talk to the Forsaken, they know things from the time because they lived through it. So I think she's a Forsaken, and we just learned at the beginning that one of the Forsaken was a teacher or a scholar of some type, and this person
Masana,
likes to teach and share their knowledge. Just saying, something is, I don't trust her at all.
Okay.
Putting it out there. Already, chapter one. but anyway, so she says all of that stuff. He's great, just like the men of the past. And her husband, Jared, is there. He went to Jared. He says that, you know, all the great stuff. But, you know, and then Corinne, someone who's a woman in silver and gray, who is a little sus, but I'm holding my mind about it. The book describes her as, if she had had the brains to match her toughness, she would have been dangerous. I was like, damn.
So basically she's a tough idiot.
Right? I was like, the shade, that's really, that's harsh. Then there's a woman named Nain Arwan, and she's wearing all blue, and she has these keys up and down her sleeve, which sounded really cool. And she's one of the noble people, and she says, you know, I think they probably planned it ahead of time, those people. They plan to, like, ambush you and then have one person best you. So you shouldn't be that impressed, and you have to be more careful. They were probably just trying to get the money and split it all anyway. And Rand says, quote, "Can I always count on my enemies not to work together?" And it catches her off guard. And I thought to myself, I hope he really takes that lesson to heart, because all of his enemies are working together behind the scenes right now. So
yeah,
I really hope that line does not come. That's not like a what could go wrong
foreshadowing kind of line. Yeah.
So a man named Lord Lear says that, you know, Rand is so wise and he's correct, and that he has to identify his enemies before they have the chance to collaborate if he wants to be successful. And I thought to myself, yeah, he does. And I hope he identifies that vulpine woman who is Forsaken. a bunch more of the people agree. They all say he's great. And then the last person to say something out loud is a man named Nassin. And he says that he's like another Jerome or Jerome, whatever. Someone from the past, the Age of Legends. And from across the yard, a man's voice echoes out, "Why?" And I thought he was asking him that question, like, to that. And I was like, I'm already confused by these names, so I hope we're not getting down a rabbit hole here. But it is Devram Bashir. That's Fael's dad, right?
It is, yes.
So if I'm remembering correctly, he joined Rand really close to the end of the last book, like, really close. Like, he just showed up and was like, I'm on the hunt for... Or Mazrim Tame is loose in the streets, and I'm a freak in the sheets, and I'm looking for him. And Rand was like, okay, you can, if you agree to be like, you know, do everything I say as I say and all that, then you can follow me, right? And lead my people, my army?
Yes.
Okay. Was there anything else from last time we saw him? That's kind of the last time I remember seeing him.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Okay. So he is the man who shouted out, why? And he's not asking about the, you know, why did you call him Jerome or whatever. He's asking, why are you doing this? This is pointless, this sword fighting. You're putting yourself in danger for nothing, because ultimately, a dagger of a sword is not going to be what kills you. And he, without warning, out of nowhere, remember this is someone in Rand's camp leading his men, out of nowhere, he grabs his dagger and, like, darts towards Rand, and he gets right up to him with the dagger right against his chest before Rand embraces Sidene and channels. And I'm just going to read the text. It says, Sidene flooded into him, carrying the Dark One's taint, an avalanche of foul ice, a torrent of reeking molten metal. It tried to crush him, to scour him away, and he rode it like a man balancing atop a collapsing mountain. He channeled a simple weave of air that wrapped up the dagger and stopped it in arm's length from his chest. And I read that thinking, like, I always forget how, we know how powerful Rand is and how much he channels now and how in control he seems, but, like, I always forget how painful it is for him to channel, like, that description of, like, the avalanche of foul ice and balancing atop a collapsing mountain. But he still is so in control in that moment. But I always forget, you know? So intense. So he stops him from what seems to be, like, killing him. And so everyone in the room, of course, is, like, and, like, ready to fight. Or I think a few people pass out. Very dramatic. And Rand tells everyone to halt and, like, put your weapons away, basically. He knows what was happening. He was simply showing Rand that, look, it doesn't matter. Even right now, like, someone you trust is coming at you with a knife. You stopped me because you are what you are, he says. And he's, like, you know, kind of, like, uncomfortable with, like you are, you know, he won't say it. Say it. So he says, you know, look, do this if you want, but don't put yourself in unnecessary danger. And he says something like, well, you know, men of the past have fought 11 people at the same time. And he's like, again, completely pointless. And then Rand has a thought that's not his own. I'm assuming from Luce. Because all of that text that's in italics is usually, like, Luce's voice in his mind. And he hears, the only way to live is to die. And he thinks it sounds like he's heard it before. And I'm like, oh my god, this sounds like the Matt thing about dying and being reborn, making me nervous. Rand and Bashir are like, sort of off to the side. They're chatting about Rand's well-being. How are you doing? You don't seem okay. He seems, like, sort of distracted and overcome. Everyone's kind of watching as well, worried for him because he doesn't seem okay. So he assures everyone he's okay. He's not. But him and Bashir, you know, first they're talking about some Aes Sedai they encountered at a recent, like, village they went to, I think. And when she found out who Rand was, she ran screaming.
I think she was in Camelin, when she found out that Rand had basically defeated Robin and sort of is holding Camelin, she ran screaming.
Yeah, and Bashir is like, oh, I wish we had been able to talk to her first because we could use an Aes Sedai on our side right now. And then they start talking about ultimately what the plan to take Ilion is, and it was conceived mostly by Matt with Bashir's help. And he's like, you know, he talks about Matt a little bit. He also asks Rand if he thinks he can maybe get Egwene Sedai, the Green Sister, to come aid them. And for a split second, I was like, wait, did we fast forward? Did I miss Egwene choosing an Asha? But the next line is, like, Rand thinking, like, oh, if he only knew. I forgot that everyone thinks she's Aes Sedai here. So yeah. Rand says, you know, she's got other duties at the moment. And Bashir is like, listen, I know you have trust issues with the Aes Sedai. I know you're uncomfortable with them. And Rand very much is still. But he says that he'll need Aes Sedai on his side in order to, like, defeat the Dark One ultimately. And he needs that perception of people. He needs their backing. People need to know that they trust him. So you gotta work it out. Rand says that...
Like Beyonce.
Yeah, you gotta work it out.
I forgot about that song.
Me too. I'm gonna listen to it later now.
So I'm literally picking up my phone right now to put it on playlist to listen to later. Yeah.
Freakum Dress, that's another good one.
That one's one of my favorite Beyonce songs.
Right, that's such a good one. Oh, I'm still thinking about Countdown from when we talked about it on our Patreon.
So good.
So Rand says, okay, well, if you think I need Aes Sedai on my side, what would you say if I told you that there were, you know, a little over 100 rebel Aes Sedai ready to support me? And he's like, intrigued. Tell me more. So Rand tells him the, you know, what he's heard from Egwene so far about this supposed, like, defecting of the tower, and how there are people out there, supposedly well over 100 sisters, who would support him. And, you know, Bashir, some people would think this is unusual or hard to believe, but Bashir is like, oh, that actually sounds like your best bet. So, great. And then they're interrupted by a Saldaean man named Tamad, who is a little suspect to me. But again, I'm just on edge. I'm just on edge. So I'm leaving
it
alone.
I feel like anytime you see a new person, you're like, mm-mm.
You know, Reverend Jordan has a way of describing certain people. And I think the thing about Tamad, he said, like, he's not someone who would answer to the dragon. He obviously only answers to Bashir and, like, kind of follows Rand out of default, but, you know, really doesn't follow Rand. And the fact that they made, like, a comment about that already just shows that he is someone that will be somewhat significant, I feel like. And that makes me wonder, are you to be trusted? Or will you have a surprise awakening? I don't know. Anyway. So this guy, he comes out and he's like, okay, someone is here to see you. And who else is it but the who must have had his ears burning? It's Masrim Tame. He has arrived. And that is going to be awkward because the two people that are being announced that Masrim Tame has arrived have very different opinions of what they want to do with him or what is to be done with him. Because what were they going to do? They were going to kill him, right? Bashir, they were going to take him prisoner or they were going to kill him?
Probably just kill him. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like hold him accountable for his crimes.
Right.
Slash
punish
just kill him.
LOL. Yeah. So that's the end of my chapter. Ooh, awkward.
Well, it picks right up where you left off on chapter 2.
Yes.
And it is called A New Arrival, and the sigil is the ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai. And Bashir is tense AF that Tame is here. And Rand thinks that he must be here for his amnesty for men who can channel. But Bashir asks, like, well, what if he thinks he's still the Dragon Reborn? And Rand is like, well, if he is, I am going to show him who is boss. And there is only one dragon. And he says that.
Did you watch Who's the Boss?
I did. I have such faint memories of it, other than Judith Light.
Oh, Judith Light. What about Mona?
Oh, I do remember Mona, but I never watched reruns of it, so I only ever watched it like while I was on, which I was pretty young.
Oh, I loved it. I watched it all the time as a kid.
Is Mona, the actress who played Mona is no longer alive, right?
Catherine Hellmans is her name. Let me look her up.
How did you know that?
I love her. Did you watch Soup? Or I'm sorry, Soap?
No, I never did.
Soap was funny. It was on Comedy Central, and I used to watch it when I was little, and I used to feel like I was watching a really adult show.
She's dead. She died in 2019.
Oh, rest in peace. She was great. She was on she was on Everybody Loves Raymond. She was one of their moms.
Ew, I hate that show.
Oh, I loved that show growing up. I know. Ugh, it's
I just
so...
I can't. Ray Romano's voice makes me want to throw myself into traffic.
I bet you, like, that is what a lot of people feel about, like, The Nanny, whereas I can listen to Fran Fine all day.
Oh, I think Fran her Drescher. Voice is so great. I love Fran Drescher.
Oh, we really got off. I'm sorry. When you said Who's the Boss, I just thought of Who's
you
the
Boss. You said Who's the Boss?
No, you said someone was going to show someone who's boss. Who's boss. And then I thought, the song for Who's the Boss instantly came into my head. Like, literally, this is how my mind works. And side note, this is why our other podcast is going to work. But this is how my mind works. You said, show them who's boss. And I swear to God, the first thing that happened in my mind is I saw the beginning of the opening sequence to Who's the Boss in my head. And I heard the song go, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And I could not say it.
For some reason, now all I can think about is, when your world looks kind of weird, which is Muppet Babies, but... what's the Who's the Boss theme?
It's like, there's a time for love and a time for living. Brand new choice around the bend. Mm-hmm. The choice you make and the something's given. Friend in life, And then there's a bridge. There's a time you lost a thing or two. I don't know exactly the words, but this is the sound of it. And something, something, and at the end was you.
Did you like my Kermit the Frog impression?
I really did, actually.
Thank you.
And I love the Muppet Babies so effing much.
I don't know. Did he die?
No, Skeeter. Scooter's, you know Scooter.
I do. Oh, and Skeeter was his twin sister?
Yeah, but she's not a Muppet anywhere else except for in Muppet Babies.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think she's ever been in anything else besides Muppet Babies, and I think that How is rude. Not right.
I agree. Anyway, so Mazrim Tame, Bashir is like, okay, fine, I'll honor your amnesty, I won't kill him, but if he ever steps foot in Saldea again, he's dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Rand tells the Andorans they can leave. And for a minute, they're all like, Mo, we'll stand with you. Like, we're brave. We're not afraid. And then he's like, go. And they all scamper as quickly as possible.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, so the one funny. Guy gets up and he's like, I, for one, Rand, would never leave your... He's like, goodbye.
Yeah. It's like the Bugs Bunny cartoon when the witch disappears and it's all the little bobby pins that, like, are just dust in the air behind her.
Yeah, just spinning.
So finally Tame enters, and RJ describes him as above average height, well above average height, dark with tilted eyes and a hooked nose and high cheekbones. And I'm going to send you, there's an actor who, I'm not quite sure how this happened, but I remember I told you there was, when people were talking about Cad Swain being cast, and the actress Shore Ogdeshlu being cast as her, and then like suddenly she and Rafe Judkins were like chatting about it.
Uh-huh.
And there was like a moment like that where this actor started like being engaged by the audience. And his name is Daniel Malick, and he's not like super, super well known. He was in like an episode of Handmaid's Tale and a couple other things. And I just think he's perfect for Tame. So I just sent you a picture of him.
Oh, I can see that.
So that he's is my new handsome. Headcanon for Tame. Yeah, very handsome.
He's so handsome that it almost looks like it could be AI.
Oh, I could see that. Like those, nobody should be allowed to have cheekbones like that. It's just not fair to the rest of us.
Yeah, like I'm looking at this picture and I just feel like there should be an ad on this that's telling me like to go to a spiritual retreat and find my inner self and become a higher being like this beautiful person.
Yeah, basically. So there's Tame, and his clothes are a little beat up because, you know, he's been on the run. So it's not super surprising that things aren't going fantastic for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Rand thinks that he's probably about 15 years older than he is. Tame is 15 years older than Rand. And Rand is kind of like amazed that he's managed to hold on to his sanity for so long. And as he approaches, Luz Theron's thoughts kind of like bubble up in Rand's mind, saying like, kill them all. They should all be killed. Kill them. Kill them. And like talks about Samael and Demondra and other male Forsaken that he should have just killed when he had the chance. And Rand like shouts back at the voice in his head and says that he's Randall Thor. And as he's having this little like internal, argument, Bashir says, you're Mazrim Tame, or you say you're Mazrim Tame. And Rand is like, wait a minute, like, what are you talking about? Like, this is the guy that you were hunting. Like, do you think it's not him? And Tame explains that he has shaved since he saw him last. And he's like, okay, you want proof that I'm Tame? Like, what are things only I would know? And he starts to needle Bashir about kind of part of a story that we don't really understand as readers. But I think the implication is like Bashir tried to trick him and have these people kill him while they were like parlaying, which is, you know, against the rules of war or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe Tame killed both of these men along with their wives. And so he's just kind of like needling him about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Bashir takes the bait and like starts to draw his sword, and Rand has to like grab onto Bashir's arm to keep him from drawing. And the five swordsmen who have their swords like pressed into Tame's back, Rand thinks they're like likely pressing hard enough to be drawing blood even through his coat at this point. And Rand says, whatever your crimes are, they pale before the Forsaken, and says, like, you know, Mesaana controlled schools that taught children the glories of the Dark One. Demondred captured two cities and fed all of the people to the Trollocs simply because he felt slighted by the people who lived there before he turned to the Shadow, and talks about a couple others. And he's like, whatever your crimes are, if you are here for my amnesty, you'll earn your pardon like 100 times over by the time the last battle comes. So he's like, you know, Rand says, like, if you submit to me, blah blah blah. And Tame is like, well, I was thinking more like a 50-50 kind of deal, like maybe 51-49 with you as the senior partner. And Rand absolutely loses it on Tame and is like screaming at him. And he's like, I'm the dragon, Tame, me. And all I can think of when I read that line is that scene in 30 Rock where somebody shows Jenna a cover of two, like a People magazine cover where it's like, who wore it best? And it's like her and, I don't know, Angelina Jolie. And she goes, I did. I wore it best.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, I love that scene. Anyway, so Tame quickly drops to one knee and says he'll serve and obey. But RJ keeps noting that his lips like almost turn up in like a little bit of a smile. And Luz Theron is babbling in Rand's head about killing him. And Rand is like shocked and enraged. And he's like, you know, why would you give up so quickly? And Tame says, like, well, what are my choices? Basically, to wander the world alone and hunted while you rise to glory. And it kind of reminds me a lot of Asmodian, who was like, you know, I saw a man falling from a cliff who grabbed onto blades of grass to try to catch himself. You know, you'll grab onto anything when you're trying to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And Tame is basically like, listen, you'll have great honors before this is done, and the world, the histories will say that I stood at your right hand, and maybe some of those honors and glory will fall my way. And Rand is like, forget about glory. All you're here to do is to like make sure the world survives against the Dark One. And he asks Tame, can you teach a man to channel? Can you test him to see if he can be taught? And Tame is like, oh, so this amnesty, like, really? Like, men have actually shown up to be tested? And Rand says, you know, just answer me. And Tame says, yes, I can do both. And over the years, I found 5 men who passed the test, but only one went beyond the test to try to learn to channel, and says that the man lasted for 2 years before he went mad, and Tame had to kill him before he killed me.
Yeesh.
And Rand asks, like, how did you, and Rand hears 2 years and is kind of like doing the math in his head, and he's like, how did you manage to hold off the madness for so long? And Tame asks, worried? But he's like, I don't know. I can't help you. I just did. I'm as sane as Lord Bashir. And Rand, and he's like, okay, I understand you don't trust me yet. You will in time. And he says he brought him a present as a token of future trust, and pulls out from his coat one of the seals on the Dark One's prison. And so Rand now is holding one of the three that he has, knows that 3 of them have been broken, and he wonders where the 7th is. And as he's holding it, Luz Theron's voice starts saying he must break it, break them all, strike quickly. And as he's shutting the voice down, he realizes that he is holding it over his head and muttering about breaking it, breaking it. And Bashir grabs onto his arms and is like, I don't know what that is, but maybe you should wait before you decide to break it. And Rand kind of comes back to awareness and realizes, like, everyone is looking at him with some big eyes, and Tame's face is like completely shocked. And Rand is like, so where did you find this? And do you know if there are any others? And Tame basically says, like, I found it in a farm. Some farmer gave it to me. That's the only one I know of. But I've heard some of the seals are broken, and even a hammer could break this one, which makes Bashir realize what it is. And Rand quickly wraps it back up and hands it to Bashir and tells him to guard it carefully. And Bashir takes it very reverently and says, for 10 hours or 10 years, it will be safe until you require it. Mm. And Rand looks at Bashir and says, you know, everyone is waiting for me to go mad, but not you. And even now, you must have finally thought I was mad, but you weren't afraid of me. Why? And Bashir says that when he was a new soldier, the Marshal General of Saldea was mad, but he could out-general anyone. And so Rand laughs and is like, so you're following me because you think I can out-marshal the Dark One? And Bashir replies, I follow you because the world must follow you, or those who will survive will wish themselves dead. And so Rand is like, cool, great. And he says that he's taking Tame to the farm and invites Bashir, who dryly declines. And Tame asks what farm, and Rand thinks to himself about how he doesn't like Tame, but he doesn't have to like Tame to use him. And he tells Tame, "I'm taking you where you can serve me." And that is the end of chapter 2.
Mm.
What are your thoughts?
It's interesting. I did not expect him to be pulling out a seal.
Yeah.
Why would he have that? I think he's... do we know why he has that? No, right?
I mean, he explains that basically while he was traveling, somebody like was like, "Oh, you're the Dragon Reborn. My family's been guarding this for thousands of years.
But
you
like,
take it."
Why would... That sounds very like some random family was just guarding one. Why did they have it?
I mean, why did Boatman, Basil, nope, not Basil Gill, Bail Damon, he had one of them.
I guess so, but he's an explorer. Like, he looks for that kind of shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just there. It's been thousands of years, and it's kind of been, the world has been turned upside down. So they've sort of shown up in random places, like with him, Nynaeve found one in that random museum in Tanchico.
Yeah. Damn. Well, I hope that he can trust Mazrim Tame.
Okay.
I think he can for now, but, you know, he was having all of those thoughts from Luce about the Forsaken and how it sounds like many of them were, you know, in Luce's camp, were on his side before they became Forsaken, and, you know, some would leave through jealousy or they wanted to be number one and they were, you know what I mean? So what if that
Or like Asmodian, they wanted to be a rock star.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope that doesn't happen. I feel like he can probably trust him for now, but I don't think, unless someone could figure out, maybe Nynaeve, how to control like what drives them mad, I don't know if he could trust Mazrim. Because even though he's been able to hold whatever at bay for 15 years, that's not a small thing. Something is up about that. That's not normal. And the fact that, oh, I don't know how I did it, I just did it. No, that doesn't cut it. So I think he's holding back information on purpose, like Aes Sedai hold back their little secrets. And I think he, if he's not already a dark friend, I think he has like very high potential to just be turned when he's not getting the attention he wants, because he's probably thinking right now, like, okay, I'll say, like you said, you got to do what you got to do to survive. And I think he really means that, like, you know, I'll pretend to be cool with this and that I'll follow you. I can lie, whatever. And then when I get my chance, I'm going to snatch it. So, But at least he has someone, like, actually powerful. Maybe he can learn from. Maybe he can use him to his advantage while he can trust him in the same way that, you know, Nynaeve is able to use Mageddon or whatever her fake name is right now.
Merrigan,
You know? Yeah, I hope it doesn't bite him in the ass, though. I hope his like whole plan with the amnesty, that someone like Tame doesn't mess it up for everyone else who could potentially be in control of channeling as a man and be on the side of light.
Yeah, true.
Oh,
what was your favorite part of these two chapters?
I don't know. Let's see. My favorite part... I like getting to know Devran Bashir's character a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's exciting to me to see people related to Fael pop up in the world and see how that shows up, because we obviously are going to see her in this book, because we've already seen her in the prologue, and now already seeing her dad be like a main character. I'm wondering how that's all going to play out. Makes me feel like there's going to be a cross-section between Perrin in the future and Rand again. And I really like that we heard Matt's name, because I'm really curious what's going to happen there. So I feel like he's not going to be left out of this book. So just the whole conversation between Rand and Bashir after he's like, "Are you okay?" Where he talks about like Egwene, Sedai, and Matt, and it kind of like catches us up again. And provides like some insight into Devrim's character too, because like I said at the end of my chapter, I was like, oh, this is going to be really awkward when when he comes in, and this is going to make him be like, oh, I'm not going to follow Rand anymore, I gotta kill him, this is unheard of. But you know, seeing the way he took it just shows a little bit more like how he is, and so I enjoyed that like moment of character development. I
I feel like it ticked a lot of boxes. What about you?
It's funny. I actually was going to pick the same part. I really like Davram Bashir's character. I think he is really, he's not a particularly complicated character, but he is, I think it's, and I'm trying to remember, I'm trying to think if I'm going to regret saying this in any of the future books, but I feel like he's such a good mentor for Rand, because I feel like he is a really perfect example of, like, kindness, not as, like, coddling, but as a, like, I want you to be prepared for the world kind of perspective, and not in like a harsh I'm gonna teach you mean awful lessons kind of way, but he really has his like head on straight and his like heart is in the right place, and I feel like Rand is not always surrounded by those types of characters. So I feel like he's a really, really good influence to have around Rand.
That was also my favorite part. Well, look at us. I'm curious to see more of him and that whole dynamic, because I'm sure there's going to be something coming up. We all heard Fael say, I'm not going to go with you. I'm going with you. So
yeah, exactly.
She's on the move.
Well, if you would like to help us grow, the best thing you could do is go rate and review our podcast on whatever platform you're using to listen to our episodes. It is so fast, so easy, and really, really helps us out.
Yes, and if you could also take some time to tell a friend, tell someone you know who you think might be interested in our show, because word of mouth is really the hugest way to get out there.
Yeah, and our social media is Cool Story Pod on Instagram and Cool Story Pod 1 on Twitter. You can email us at coolstorypod@gmail.com. We'll give you the link to join our Discord if you like. We love hearing from you, so let us know and say hi.
Exactly. And if you've heard us in the past episodes talk about our Patreon and the fun things we do on there, you can check it out and get in on the know and know what everyone's talking about, all of us, the whole world. It's patreon.com/NandMatt, and we do bonus episodes where we play games, review movies and stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're literally about to record an episode where we reviewed the movie Cats. So, you should go subscribe to hear that. And if you want, you can also buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/NandMatt.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening to Cool Story.
See you next week.